This February, the Irish Heritage Center of Greater Cincinnati will present an evening of music and storytelling by Irish songwriter, author, and playwright, Mr. Larry Kerwin. Kerwin is best known as the lead singer of Black 47, an Irish-American rock band formed in the late 1980s. Larry, welcome to the program.
Pleasure, Jim. Great to be on.
As a child of the 80s, I'm really looking forward to hearing you read stories, particularly from your memoir, Green Suede Shoes, because in the story, you came to the U.S. in the 1970s?
Yeah, and I came as a student first. You were allowed to come at that point from Ireland, and they gave you a social security number to work in the summertime and fund your studies and then go back. But I jumped ship and stayed here. New York was pretty exciting at that point, and I just stayed on.
So how old were you around this time?
I was about 20 at that point.
Did you know anyone in the city or places you could stay?
No. I just hopped on a plane. I had $50 and landed in right on 34th Street and 8th Avenue in a place called the New Yorker Hotel. So it was very much a city that was in chaos at the time. So it was just a very exciting place to be, and it was kind of hard to go back to Ireland. I did go back and tried it a few times, and then I finally got my situation sorted out here legally and just stayed at that point.
You're from a small coastal town called Wexford on the southeast coast, right?
Yeah.
What sort of town is Wexford?
Wexford is a really special place, which I deal with quite a bit in that memoir, Green Suede Shoes. It was a seaport, so many people there were sailors, including my father, who used to sail off to South America for 6 months and then he'd be home for 3 months. So it was an unusual kind of bringing up. I was also not raised by my parents. I was raised by an old grandfather who was a very staunch Irish Republican. So I ingested a lot of the history of Ireland through him and use that in many ways with Black 47 when Black 47 was formed and was dealing with the British problem in the north of Ireland at that point.
Coming back to New York quickly, you come over here when you're in your 20s, and before too long, you find yourself hanging out in CBGBs with some of the biggest characters in rock history.
Yeah, you see, CBGBs was just basically around the corner from where I lived. So I knew Hilly Crystal, the owner, pretty well. So I always got in free into the club. And of course, I was playing in the club, too, with different bands. But it was kind of a local to me in ways. So I was actually there the first night the Ramones played. I remember it vividly. It was hardly anybody else there at the time. And I saw and was able to hang around with people like Patti Smith and Television and a great band from Ohio, I thought were actually one of the best performing bands, a band called the Dead Boys. They were just amazing, the stage show they used to put on. I think they were from the Cleveland area, though.
I'm very curious. The Beatles play a huge role in a lot of your writing. John Lennon's a character in your novel Rock in the Bronx, and you have a play called Liverpool Fantasy. What could you tell us about that?
Anybody who came up in the 70s or 60s and 70s, the Beatles were just such strong an influence, both musically and culturally at that point. I remember someone saying to me at one point that John Lennon would have been a success no matter what field he would have gone into. And when I was younger, I used to think, yeah, Lennon's great. Of course he would have been like that. He would have been successful. But then I began to think back on my own town of Wexford, which was chock-a-block with musicians. And there were a number of guys there who were Lennons in their own right. Maybe not had all the talent he had, but had a lot of it. But usually there would be one flaw or many flaws in their characters that would stop them getting ahead. You know, they would be too arrogant or they would drink too much. And Lennon had those flaws. So I visualized a world. What would happen? What would have happened to the Beatles and what would have happened to us if there had been no Beatles? In Rock in the Bronx, it's an urban novel set in the Bronx in New York and concerns four Irish emigrants who come from places like I came from, Wexford, which is 10, 15,000 people, and are all of a sudden stranded in the Bronx in 1980, 82. And during that period was a real watershed period in New York that the city was actually going through big changes. But also, both John Lennon was killed, Bob Marley died, and Bobby Sands, the Irish hunger striker, all died or passed on within a year of each other. So dealing with the city at that point, those three people were major icons for young Irish people in the Bronx at that point.
You mentioned Bob Marley. Why do you think he resonated so much with the Irish folks in the States?
He resonated very much with Irish folk everywhere because, oddly enough, Irish people love reggae music. And I began to research that, too. And in 1649, when Oliver Cromwell defeated the Irish in Ireland, there was an army of young Irish people. He didn't quite know what to do with them. He didn't want to kill them all. But at the same point, the sugar plantations in the West Indies, in the Caribbean, in British-held territory, were being founded, and he needed slaves. So to kill two birds, he just took the Irish, this particular young Irish army, and the women folk around them, and sent them all to Barbados and Jamaica and any place that the British were forming sugar plantations. And then he ran out of Irish people, and eventually they started to take Africans from Africa and move them there too. What happened was that the Irish slaves and the black slaves intermarried. So you can still hear the kind of lilt in the Jamaican and the Caribbean accent. And if you listen to the beginning of Redemption Song by Bob Marley, that's an Irish melody he's playing on the guitar. So that culturally, as well as just musically, the Irish always, in some deep way, connected with reggae music.
And continuing on that theme of people being transported from their home to another place, you recently did a project with Thomas Keneally, who's probably best known for writing the book that eventually became Schindler's List. And you did a project called Transport about young women being sent to Australia.
Yeah, Tom and I were friends. We were introduced in New York, and he was a fan of Black 47. He related to the fact that we had opened up the whole Irish immigrant experience through the songs of Black 47. So one night we were having a couple of drinks. He told me he would really like to do something similar to what Black 47 had done with the Irish-American experience, with the Irish-Australian experience. And he had this story in mind, which was just great. I thought it was his wife's great-grandmother had been sent as a convict from Cork in Ireland in 1839 to Botany Bay, which later became Sydney. Basically, the idea was that the Irish women convicts would marry the male convicts who were there already. So the action takes place on this ship while the women are being transported from Ireland to Australia. And he had four characters, four different women, one of whom was based on his wife's great-grandmother and three others. And they were really strong characters. So he started to send me the story, and then I adapted parts of it to music and to song, and that became the musical Transport. So I was in Sydney in December, and we put it on down there, and hopefully it'll move to the U.S. at some point in the future.
Let's talk about the music. Let's talk about Black 47. You just released your latest album, Bankers and Gangsters, and you're soon to go on the road to support the album?
Well, no. Black 47 has been out supporting the album all the time. The band goes back on the road. We do one gig here first, and then we go back on the road in March 1st. But in the meantime, I'm taking the month of February to do some of these rock and read shows, and that'll be a combination of the literature, the books I've written, readings from that, along with relevant Black 47 songs, which I'll play acoustically.
And you'll also be in Dublin, Ohio this summer for the Irish Festival?
Yeah, you know, we haven't played there now, and I think about 4 years, so it'll be good to go back there. We were part of that festival pretty much from its inception. In fact, the rise of Black 47 paralleled the rise in popularity of a lot of the Irish festivals. And we were usually the first rock band that these festivals hired, or one of the first rock bands anyway. So we tend to play them at different times, and we'll we'll play them for a couple of years and then not play for a couple of years or whatever.
Well, we're all looking forward to being transported by your music and your stories. What sort of things will you be playing that night?
Well, I'll do songs from all through Black 47's work. I'll do songs from the early albums, and if people are worried, I will definitely do Funky Cayley, and I'll do James Connolly. So I'll do a number of the most popular songs and a number of songs that people might know but are not totally familiar with.
Larry Kerwin will be visiting the Irish Heritage Center of Greater Cincinnati on Saturday, February 4th at 6 p.m., where he will be playing some of his music and reading excerpts from his writing. For more information about the event and the Irish Heritage Center, please visit our website at WVXU.org. For Around Cincinnati, I'm Jim Nolan.
Talked about racehorses and the epistles of St. Paul. Oh, the Bob, the Bushmills, they could have settled it all. Hey, Jim, I miss you still. We fought.